We the people.
We the people.
We the people of the United States.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
New states shall be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new states shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction or by the junction of two or more states or parts of the states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. Congress shall have the power to dispose and make of all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. And the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect them, each of them, against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Article 4, Sections 3 and 4 of the United States Constitution. Welcome back, my friends. It is Constitution Thursday, a time we set aside to look at the United States Constitution, talk about what it says, how it got to say that, what it meant when it was written that way, and how it's been interpreted since then, and how it affects your life today. We call it Constitution Thursday. We do it every Thursday at 5 o'clock right here on Afternoons Live with Dave and John. You can join us via the text machine 565-DAVE. Or email DaveDiamondShow at clearchannel.com. Eloqui Coritio, stand up. Tell those who oppose liberty, don't tread on me. So the convention, John, meeting in 1787, understood that the country was going to grow. It was sort of a foregone conclusion. In fact, having won their independence, you had these colonies with the Northwest Territories already established. They knew that there was going to be more growth.
There's a lot more space out there for us to gobble up.
In fact, Vermont was already kind of chomping at the bit. Vermont had been longing for separation from New York. And in point of fact, Colonel Green, Ethan Nathaniel Green and his Green Mountain Boys almost had their own colony before the revolution broke out, and then they kind of got sucked up into that and didn't have time to deal with all that kind of stuff. Kentucky was pretty much understood, the Cumberland Gap and all those kinds of things was pretty much understood to be essentially its own colony already, its own state already. It just wasn't official yet because they hadn't gotten around to doing all the paperwork for it. Dan'l Boone had already discovered the Cumberland Gap. People were going which way and that way.
Even then, mired by bureaucracy.
Well, and see, that goes back to why are we having this convention to begin with, which was the fact that the Articles of Confederation had constructed such a weak central government that they literally couldn't even really negotiate trade treaties. They couldn't negotiate things that a normal nation
right.
could have done.
It wasn't too strong, but it wasn't even strong enough to get anything done.
And each individual state publishing, printing their own money. It was a disaster. The Depression. We talk about recessions and depressions now, but they had them then, too. That's why there was a lot of concern, a lot of discussion about, well, how can we fix this? The only way to do this, of course, would be create a strong national government that would actually be able to handle these things, while at the same time protecting individual liberties, which was the primary focus of the convention, not necessarily state liberties. Although they did make it clear that, look, the federal government isn't here to rule the states. It's here to govern the states. Two different things, if you get my drift. But they knew that these new states were going to be formed. They were afraid. Gouverneur Morris, your hero, and mine as well, was actually afraid that as the country grew, there would be more Western states. And because of the way they were formatting this government with two senators each from each state, He was afraid that the Western states would soon overwhelm the Eastern states in the Senate.
And so then everybody would wind up doing things the way that these new frontier states were doing things.
Right. As opposed to the way that they were going to happen anyway, which was the Southern states, because of the three-fifths clause, had higher representation than they normally perhaps should have. And on you go. Point being that he tried to get that stalled. It didn't happen. The process moved forward to the point where they hit upon the same solution that they've hit upon before, which is the Constitution, while we refer to it as the law of the land, is not really the law of the land. And this is by what I mean by that.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
it's the Torah. It's the guideline. It's the, hey, this is what you do. Now pass a law to do it. Pass some legislation to do it. It's the supreme law.
In a lot of ways, they did do that, right? They said, hey, establish a post office.
Right.
But they didn't tell you exactly how to do it.
Form a Navy.
Right.
Pay for it, too. Nah, pay for them out of the Treasury, but we'll work out how we're going to pay them legislatively. So they actually hit on that same solution again when they said, well, all right, if there's more states, we're going to oversee the territories. The Congress will oversee the territories. But when they're ready to become states, there's some certain conditions here. They can't be made out of other states without the permission of that legislature and the Congress. They can't be combined from two other states, all these kinds of things being in there. And we'll pass some laws later on for how we're going to do this. And they did, of course. They passed numerous laws about how to become a state, one of which is a very interesting ideal. In order for an territory to become a state, so you form a territory, the Congress says, okay, this is now the territory
of
Oregon,
like Puerto Rico, Guam.
Puerto Rico, Guam, the Washington Territory, the territory of Deseret, which would eventually become Utah, the Nevada territories, Montana, the Dakotas. How do these areas become states? Congress says, okay, we're going to pass an enabling act. And in this enabling act, we're going to set out certain conditions. And for the people of that area to meet, if they meet these conditions, then we will allow them to become a state. Now, one of those conditions is that they have to propose a Republican form of government constitution for the area and define the area that will be the state, which isn't always the entire territory, as we've seen along the way. I mean, the Oregon Territory ends up being Oregon, Washington, part of Idaho. The Deseret Territory ends up being Nevada, Utah, parts of Colorado, parts of Idaho, parts of Wyoming. These things change. The Dakotas turns into two states. It's kind of up to the people there to define what this is going to be. And the Enabling Act pours out the guidelines for how they're going to do this. And so Congress will pass this Enabling Act, and they will send it on to the states. I happen to have here in my hands, John, the Enabling Act of 1894, for the state of Utah, which is probably one of the more detailed, I guess, enabling acts ever passed by Congress.
So what does that mean? That just the Enabling Act is basically like these guys are ready to go to become a state.
If you meet the conditions in this Enabling Act, it will enable you to become a state.
Oh, so the conditions are individualized for each territory. So
yeah.
It's like, hey, look, Puerto Rico, if you guys want to become a state, here are the things you are going to need to do. And once you've done those things, then okay.
All of them include, by the way, the Republican form of government. You must propose a state constitution
right.
to the Congress of the United States, which can be accepted, rejected, or sent back for changes and modifications. And then once we've approved that, if you meet all the other conditions, on you go. The reason the Utah one is interesting is because Utah, of course, had a very, I guess, rocky time is the best way to describe it as a territory. It was a problematic area. In the sense that nobody was sure whose side they were on out there in the old territory of Deseret. And sometimes it seemed like they were on the federal side, and sometimes it seemed like they were on their own side.
And sometimes it seemed like it was just a funny way of spelling the word desert.
Yes. To the point where at one point, just before the Civil War, the United States government sent General Albert Sidney Johnson with troops to Salt Lake City to kind of oversaid thing. Albert Sidney Johnson, yes.
Serial killer, three names.
He's an interesting guy. He was in the mid to late 1850s, John. Albert Sidney Johnson was considered the greatest soldier this nation had ever produced. He was the epitome of what a United States general should be. Often compared in that era to Washington.
Really?
He was tall. He was a fantastic horseman. He was well-spoken. He was also Southern in the 1850s. Want to know why you've never heard of him? Because as soon as the Civil War broke out, he resigned his commission and went south.
Right.
Where he was killed at the Battle of Shiloh, leading the Confederate forces after he got hit. He was, he kind of calmed the situation there in Utah. Then he had to leave because the Civil War was breaking out and the government pulled the troops out. And then he went south. And then a group of troops actually from California was sent to Salt Lake City to kind of keep an eye on things in the Utah territory to make sure it didn't get, let's just say, out of hand, as it were. And so these Californians actually established Fort Douglas in Utah, which is still there, and kept an eye on the colonists or the territory of Utah, which that's what the government called it, the Utah territory. The Deseret name was internal. And they don't like. So eventually in 1898, we finally sent them an enabling act. Okay, here's the things you have to do. And because it was Utah, there were some interesting permutations that other states didn't get. Some of them did, actually. Oklahoma got a similar one. But in Utah's case, one of the things that's in here very specifically is polygamy shall hereafter be forever banned. There will be no polygamy
really?
In the United States. And when you can tell you ban polygamy,
you're not going to get it.
Another interesting one here in the Utah case was Utah had kind of an interesting territorial government that actually had suffrage for women. But when it came to the vote for statehood, the legislature there denied suffrage. And they actually ended up with a case as to whether or not the Enabling Act supported the legislature saying, no, you can do that. But as soon as you're a state, you can't. And this all the way to the Supreme Court as to whether or not the Supreme Court had jurisdiction over the territory of Utah's Enabling Act because they weren't a state yet as to whether or not women could vote in the matter of statehood or not in Utah.
So whether...
which was then a territory.
Right, right.
So forth and so,
can,
on.
Yeah, so can they even have anything to say about it?
Right.
Yeah.
It was quite the mess. And of course, weird. Utah eventually did managed that and became a state, as did many others. Now, interestingly enough, Congress has seemed to be, I don't want to say they're playing favorites, but more often than not, this Enabling Act kind of gets forgotten along the way. If it's a friendly state, we kind of forget about it. One of the more interesting ones is, of course, Ohio, which until recently, John, when they went to celebrate their anniversary, they didn't even have the approval vote from Congress to become a state. It's like they just kind of forgot and made them a state. And when they went back to celebrate their 200th anniversary or whatever it was, they're looking around for the vote from Congress, the big seal proclamation, and there isn't one. Kind of went, well, we didn't even do all this stuff. We didn't even do an Enabling Act for Ohio. We just sort of said, ipso facto demando, you are in fact the state of Ohio out of the Northwest Territories. It's intriguing to watch individual areas go. Now, I'm on record, John. I don't think Puerto Rico, Guam, I don't think we need any more states. But I'd like to see this process go through. I'd like to see us pass an Enabling
Act. It would be really
act,
interesting to watch, huh?
To see how that goes.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened in my lifetime. The last time it happened, of course, was 1959, when we added Alaska and Hawaii, effective 1960. And that's, it would be interesting to me to see that process gone through. In 1861, however, things were a little bit more, complex, I guess is the best way to put it. The Civil War was breaking out, and in fact had already broken out, in one of the earliest combats of the American Civil War. Not a lot of people know this. A guy by the name of George Breton McClellan was on the Union side. He was a brigadier general at the time of volunteers, was leading some forces in the kind of in the Allegheny area there, in the western part of Virginia, eastern side of Pennsylvania. And he found himself matched up against a guy by the name of Colonel Robert E. Lee, who had resigned his position with the United States Army.
Familiar?
And had been assigned by the Confederate Army, by the Confederate people. They didn't know how good of a soldier. They knew he was a great engineer, but can the guy fight? They sent him to West Virginia because really it's West Virginia.
Right.
And there he got his hiney kicked by George B. McClellan in 1861 and basically went back to Richmond in shame because he had lost so badly and lost the western counties of Virginia to the Union already. Now, the western counties had long been agitating against the government in Richmond. They felt like, as a state, as part of the state of Virginia, they felt kind of neglected. They felt very Central Valley-esque, if you will, like the government in Richmond just didn't really care all that much about them out there in the Appalachians, and they were just kind of, yeah, we want this. No. We want this. No. We want this. No. Shh, be quiet. Your children, go sit in the corner. But now they saw an opportunity. And in October of 1861, they began to meet saying, we, you know, Virginia has seceded from the Union. What if we secede from Virginia? Let's put that to a vote in our own little areas here and see what we think we should do. Now, on the surface of it, this seems like a pretty funny thing and a pretty good idea. But from a legal standpoint, it creates some major headaches for Lincoln. Because you see, Lincoln is in the position, Lincoln's position throughout the war was,
you can't
this is not a war.
Right.
You cannot secede from the Union. You cannot secede. And this is not a war between two nations. It's an internal rebellion, meaning that the governments are still intact. And no state shall be formed without the permission of the legislature of that state and of the Congress in question.
Right.
But in October of 1861, on the ground, things aren't quite so, you know, unclear. It's quarter after 565, Dave, 565-3283. Stay with us back in a minute. Welcome back. Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio, Constitution Thursday. Looking at Article 4, Sections 3 and 4. States, how they're formed, what kind of governments they should have. West Virginia was problematic in a lot of ways. This vote in 1861, October 24th, 1861, voters from 41 counties of Western Virginia, what was then Western Virginia.
Right.
Were asked to whether or not they thought they should secede from Virginia, especially since they had old George B. McClellan standing there with his Union troops going, hey, you're safe now from those people, and there you go. 34% of them turned out to vote. You know, we complain a lot now about voter turnout, but only 34% of West Virginians actually bothered to turn out to vote for this. Now, in fairness, some of those counties bordered on counties that were clearly not seceding.
Right.
And in an era when people's, you know, relatives lived across a fence from each other and that sort of thing, it's possible that those eastern counties of West Virginia weren't all that excited about it.
Maybe they didn't actually want to do that.
34% of them turned out. They voted yes to secede. By the way, the original name of the state of West Virginia, you know what it is?
What?
For extra points. For 10 points, John. What letter do you think it started with in the alphabet? Hint, it was not W or V.
I don't know.
It was originally known as Kanawha. Kanawha. K-A-N-A-W-H-A. Kanawha. That was the original name of West Virginia.
What is that? What's the significance
I'm
of
sure
that?
It's one of the local tribes.
Yeah, maybe.
In that area.
Okay.
In April of 1861, 49 delegates from the future state of West Virginia had voted in favor of the ordinance of secession of Virginia. 30 voted against it. 2 had abstained. Almost immediately after the vote to proceed with secession from the Union prevailed in Virginia General's Assembly, a mass meeting in Clarksburg recommended that each county in northwestern Virginia send delegates to that convention in Wheeling to talk about whether or not we should get out of here. Of course, some delegates had favored the immediate formation of a new state, whilst others argued that as Virginia's secession had not yet been passed, such accidents would constitute yet another revolution against the government of the United States. This could get complicated. By the time the war is rolling in late 1861, early 1862, you've got the issue of Lincoln looking at what's going on and going, I got a problem here.
So it's kind of okay. So potentially what we're looking at, from Lincoln's perspective, is that this is almost like a double illegal secession because Virginia can't secede. So
how can
because
I let West
if
Virginia
technically
secede?
Virginia is still part of the Union, then now West Virginia is trying to secede from Virginia, which is still part of the Union,
which it can't do because it doesn't have permission from the state legislature to do.
Right.
Or the Congress to do.
Right. Right. This is messed up.
And meantime, I've got to figure out whether or not I can blockade Virginia or send troops in. Is it an invasion or is it a suppression of a rebellion?
Because you can't do that unless, right.
And it seems like it's an academic discussion to us today. We look at it and go, well, that's just stupid. But understand, Lincoln had a big problem. And that problem was the same problem George Washington had. It was the same problem James Madison had. And that was the Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. At that time, Great Britain and Ireland, who was, again, not quite the friend of us to the, then that they are today. In fact, Great Britain sent up, quote-unquote, observers.
They were kind of waiting for us to fail, huh?
To advise and help the Confederate Army.
Because this would be great for them if we were a nation divided.
Well, England is a country that deals in textiles. That's where that's what their primary economy is over there in the Industrial Revolution at that particular point. And where do you get stuff that you need to make textiles from, John? You get that from cotton states.
Right. Which are all southern states.
And if we go back in our history, we keep in mind the recollection of things, how the Englanders, when they came over here and the areas that they settled in. Remember that the Southerners are the Cavaliers. They are the Royalists. That traditionally, these are the people who favored the crown.
Well, and a lot of that would have been why they came, right? Like, they had thrived under British rule and thus had enough money to come out here and own land and build a plantation
in many
own
ways.
Slaves and stuff like that. So, I mean, this is like the expatriate British aristocracy to certain degree, right?
Where's the hotbed of rebellion? Is it in the South or is it in New England? It's in New England.
Right.
The North is the side that doesn't like England. The South, kind of not quite allied, but not unfriendly. And the South has made it clear that one of the things they want is the recognition as a nation of England. And if they get that, if the King of England stands up and says, we hereby recognize the Confederate States of America as a free and independent sovereign nation, the rest of the world says, well, who are we going to listen to? Abe Lincoln or the King of England?
Right.
So Lincoln has a problem. If he declares
this a war, man.
If he starts blockading southern ports where England gets their textile cotton from,
right,
he's admitting that they are, in fact, a foreign nation. And thus, England can say, okay, they're a foreign nation. Now we're going to fight on their side and unblockade these ports.
Now that you've blockaded them, right.
But if he says that, then it's his argument that you can't secede is out the window.
So he's playing a really dangerous game here.
And in the meantime, you got West Virginia saying, we want to be a state.
Yeah, we're not with these guys. We don't even know these guys.
England sends a ship across the ocean, and on this ship are two what they call commissioners
right.
to the Confederacy, who are, it's unclear exactly what they're supposed to do, but it's sort of a quasi-unofficial outreach sending a diplomatic post to the South to kind of give it some legitimacy. On the way, that ship is intercepted by the Union Navy, who immediately, the captain of the ship, immediately arrests these two Confederate commissioners and ships them off to a Union naval base and says, you're under arrest and you're staying here until I say you can go. England, of course, strenuously objects to this and says to Washington, D.C., what are you doing with our people there? And Lincoln has to come up with some pretty fancy footwork because otherwise this is the kind
right.
of thing England is looking for and the South is looking for.
Because if you grab these guys to keep them from getting there, then you're blockading and that means that they're a state.
They're legit.
Right. But if they're not legit and you're not blockading, then you grab these guys for some other ridiculous reason.
In which case, if they are a state, then West Virginia can go ahead and secede and it's no problem. But if they're still a state and part of the union, then West Virginia can't secede because the Constitution says
that you can't secede. It's illegal.
Right. Plus, it says in order to do that, you got to have the state legislature and Congress approval.
Right.
He has neither. It's half past 5:65. Dave, 565-3283. Back after this. Welcome back. Afternoons Live, Dave and John, Constitution Thursday, wrapping up Article 4, Sections 3 and 4 of the United States Constitution. The states, when we left you, West Virginia was debating whether or not to secede from Virginia, who was debating whether or not to secede from the Union, and all hell was about to break loose. By the way, when they held that vote on October 24th, 1861, that I told you about before, 18,408 votes were cast for the new state, 781 against. That's it. That's all there was.
Wow. So even though it was a fairly small number of people that showed up, it was overwhelmingly.
It was only 34% right. that showed up, but it was overwhelmingly in favor.
That's kind of what you would expect anyway, though, because the people that would show up would be the ones interested in bailing.
Especially since at all the polling places, the Union troops were standing there making sure that Confederate sympathizers were not allowed to vote.
Really?
Which seems, I don't know, John, it seems like a violation of some civil rights somewhere, I'm sure. But when someone's standing there with a gun saying, oh, you're one of them? No, you don't get to vote. Sorry.
Right.
This is for people who want to secede to vote. Still 781 of them managed to get through. So we're not even sure that the vote to secede in West Virginia is legit. How do we know? What if all these other people had shown up and it had been again? What if they'd have lost that vote? Now, from a military standpoint, it wouldn't have changed anything because McClellan was still occupying the area. But the point is that, well, there you go. Now, Lincoln, keep in mind, had won the election as kind of a dark horse candidate. He was not the favorite to win. It was a fractured electorate that had led him to get in there. He did not get the majority of the popular vote. By any stretch of the imagination, it was split amongst it. He did get the electoral votes, but he had still a problem in governance, John, which is that in order to get anything done, remember, this was before we had a army per se. It was done by militias, state militias. He had to call out the militia. He had to do all these things, and we didn't have a War Powers Act. I mean, Congress was still going to have to pay these guys, decide that they were funding the war, all those things, and he needed votes in Congress. He needed votes that were on his side in Congress. And where better to get votes on your side than in a state that, oh, I don't know, kind of loves you
that
because...
That only exists because you allowed
it
to
do so.
Dude.
Especially consider this, John. He got two senators out of this deal.
This is Game of Thrones, man.
He got two senators out of this deal. He actually got four senators out of this deal because there's another state that does... virtually the same thing, although not with the combat and everything else.
Right.
Nevada comes in under virtually the same conditions, although they don't have the secession problem, but they're formed during this time almost solely because he needs the votes and he needs the popular votes in 1864 for that election. And he wants those two senators. Now, again, we look back at it. Now we go,
that's crazy
because he won hands down. It was a landslide. He beat McClellan, General McClellan, who wins West Virginia. He beats him in a landslide. But in the summer of 1864, no one knew that was going to happen. And everyone believed that it was easily possible that McClellan, who favored reconciliation with the South and ending the war and letting them go their way, was going to win. Primarily because he was popular in the big areas where they had large newspapers that published opinion columns saying, this war is too bloody. It's time for peace.
So if McClellan had won, we may very well have divided this.
We would have.
Into two different nations.
We would have. The Confederate States would have won their independence if McClellan had been elected.
And it's only because of Lincoln that who said we need to keep this together.
You could argue, John. Now, this is where it gets really weird. You could argue it's because of McClellan that Lincoln won. You see, McClellan is the most popular Union general in the entire army. The Army of the Potomac loves him. They practically worship the ground he walks on. He is the guy that has convinced them that they are an unstoppable force. even though he can't win a battle with them, even though they continue to get slobber knocked every time they turn around, he's got them convinced that they're the greatest thing in the world, that he loves them and cares for them. And that's one of the fears Lincoln has, is because the army loves McClellan, who's the army going to vote for? And yet, it's McClellan who formed this army and forged it until they could find a leader that overwhelmingly votes for Lincoln, because they don't want their effort wasted. And they know that Lincoln will get the job done.
If they vote for McClellan, they know that he's going to go off and be president, and they won't have him anymore.
All of their sacrifice will be for nothing.
Oh, my God. And so it's a total backfire.
It is. And McClellan gets absolutely blasted in the election of 1864. Of course, you don't have 11 southern states voting.
Right.
Who probably would have voted for McClellan.
Right.
But they're not voting.
Yeah, that guy.
And in the meantime, we move on with Virginia and West Virginia. It's quarter till 565, Dave, 565-3283. Stay with us back after. Welcome back. Afternoons Live, Dave and John. Constitution Thursday, wrapping up Article 4. I like your comparison to Game of Thrones. And it just goes to show you that if they really wanted to make an interesting story, they could do one right out of our own history.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
How West Virginia.
Well, isn't that kind of what they did with Adams?
Yeah, they did.
I mean, just the stuff that you described and the stuff that Lincoln had to worry about and the machinations that went into, like, making everything work and maintaining this tenuous balance, you know, between, you know, keeping the country together, but also keeping England out of things and all, et cetera, et cetera.
And
I swear to God, dude, it could be an episode of Game of Thrones with all the political intrigue.
He keeps losing battles badly. To the point where Congress is investigating the conduct of the war. They think his wife is a Confederate spy. He has to go before Congress
so poorly
to testify that his wife is not a spy. He's losing family members. He's lost friends. The war is just, it's going. The only general that seems to be able to lead this army is his political enemy. And the one general that he finally finds that can win is hated by everybody in the political machine. U.S. Grant.
Right.
And his friend Sherman. They all think Sherman is nuts. They all think that he is freaking insane, and they want nothing to do with him. The process by which this goes to, eventually we end up with a situation where the state legislature of a reorganized government in West Virginia votes to become a state. They get an enabling act from Congress. So far, so good, right?
Well, yeah, and except that we're still dealing with the fact that,
Virginia's
Lincoln, not leaving.
Lincoln says, well, for those of you that think that this is not legit because of Article 4, Section 3, he actually looks him in the face and says, no, because that's the legitimate government of Virginia. That's the real Virginia government.
So West Virginia, because West Virginia is wanting to bail away from these other guys and not associate with them, he's saying, oh, well, clearly these guys...
are the people that you can listen to. These are the people you can trust.
Because they're the ones who still consider themselves part of the United States.
Yep. That's how...
That's brilliant. That would have been the only way to do it, too.
So February of 1863, West Virginia... I'm sorry, that's the wrong date. December of 1862, the Enabling Act was put out. And in June 20th of 1863, West Virginia state. And Lincoln goes, and 4 days later, by the way, the Battle of Gettysburg takes place, and it becomes clear that, okay, now we're cooking with gas. Vicksburg falls, Gettysburg is won, and all of a sudden it seems like, yeah, see, we get West Virginia, we get these two wins, we're heading in the right direction.
Right, that was all we needed to do.
Post-war, of course, Virginia is still upset about all this and files suit saying, no, they can't do that. Particularly these two counties that we want back. These two counties that voted against secession from us should be part of us, not part of you. All the way to the Supreme Court. This goes, and the Supreme Court says, too bad, so sad, you lost.
Wow, in essence. Really?
They do give Virginia a, because then Virginia in 1915 gets upset, says, you know what, you still owe us money because look at all this money we poured into you. And you took that and went with that. And then The Supreme Court in 1915 rules that West Virginia does in fact owe Virginia $12,393,929.50. Which Virginia, West Virginia,
so they sent him a bill,
pays off in 1939. That's thus tremendous. Settling the matter of that's West Virginia tremendous. Versus Virginia. And the only real condition of the Enabling Act for West Virginia was they had to do abolition. They had to abolish slavery, which they agreed to do. No problem there.
Yeah, because we kicked their butt.
We don't have any anyway, so it's done, it's out. And off you went. As each state guarantees a Republican form of government, they are allowed then to come in under the Enabling Acts, and they are made states by the proclamation signed then by the president, unless you're Ohio, in which case they forgot and scrambled to find it 200 years later when they go to celebrate.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to viewing the process in first person when the 51st state of Guam goes through the Enabling Act.
I've long been against this. As I said earlier, I've long been against adding more states.
What could we possibly want from Guam anyway? I'd take Puerto Rico before I took Guam.
But you almost need two because you got to keep it even number. Well, you got to keep it an even number.
You just don't want any more states because the flag looks nice.
See, when I said this before, if we add any more states, let's go back to the 13-star circle flag.
I agree with that because that's a classy-looking flag.
Quit fiddling around with all these flags and stars and blah, blah, blah. Let's put the 13 on there and let it go. Then you can add states willy-nilly and nobody will know.
Now, you realize that when you say stuff like that, you come off like the world's oldest old man telling people to get off of his lawn. Go back to the original Betsy Ross 13 stars flag.
Yeah. And then the Wilwolfs.
Yeah.
You
sound like a 200-year-old curmudgeon.
Well, I'm not 200, but I'm with you on that one. So that's how a state becomes a state. And that's how West Virginia, the state that really isn't a state, but actually is, became a state. Through all those machinations of the Constitution. All the while, it's still saying you can't do it without the state legislature. Saying yes. Well, you just get yourself a new legislature. Then you don't have that problem.
Right.
Congress says yes, get your Enabling Act, and off you go. And you get your two senators, you get all your people voting for you, you get all your army people voting for you.
Really, this is almost kind of benefit to Virginia, though, because they got rid of all the people that they wouldn't have claimed anyway.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they didn't like each other, because even to this day, if you go to the West Virginia-Virginia football game, they're still fighting that war.
Knife fights?
They're still fighting
that Hatfields war. And McCoys?
Once upon a time, the University of Virginia Marching Band did a Hatfields and McCoys halftime show that caused a lot of problems. They actually, there were some arrests after that one, so it was a mess. That's Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States. Tomorrow on the show, we got fun with news, John, and top 5 funeral arrangements. What do you want to have at your funeral? What kind of things? We've got some interesting ones already.
I've got good ones.
Yeah. I think it'll be, you already know some of the ones that have been, if you've been a fan of this show for a while, you're there on that. So that's what's coming up tomorrow. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't have that regret. I'm Dave. That's John. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. And we will see you tomorrow for a fun Friday episode of Afternoons Live right here on KFIV, 1360 AM Modesto. KWSX, 1280 AM Stockton, your home for Stockton Ports Baseball. And, of course, everywhere in the known universe via the iHeartRadio app, which you can get on your computer, your cell phone, your tablet device. Hell, they got cars that have iHeartRadio in it. Some other people do. So get that out there, and you can listen to the show anywhere, anywhere. And don't forget on podcast as well, on demand at our website, KFIV1360.com. Stay tuned. Rusty Humphreys is next here on KFIV. A little bit later, you got Stockton Ports at Lake Elsinore Storm over on KWSX. Have a great night, everybody. We will see you tomorrow.
Afternoons Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for Clear Channel Media and Entertainment Modesto.